You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Ron, and it's great having you on board. So, what's a commodity item? Often we use the word commodity to mean something that's freely traded, or something which is in such continuous demand that its value is set by the market, or even something that's become a necessary staple in a consumer society. The question is, have personal computers become commodity items? Is a PC or a Mac or broadband internet now an absolute necessity for day-to-day living? Certainly computers these days, and especially peripherals like printers, keyboards and mouses, have all become commodity items. You can buy them in supermarkets, they're delivered to your door in the same way we get groceries or furniture home delivered, and this is the interesting thing, we even throw them away when they no longer work. A wise man once observed that mature markets modularise. What does this mean? Well, in the early 1980s, for example, Tandy Corporation released the Model 3 microcomputer with its own self-contained keyboard, screen, integrated disk drives and a central processing unit. This was proprietary technology and it required trained experts to attend to and repair any faults. If the keyboard stopped working, for example, you'd take the unit back to Tandy for repair. You wouldn't, or couldn't perhaps, unplug the keyboard and put it out on the nature strip for the next hard rubbish collection. 25 years on, if a keyboard stopped working on my home computer, I would be putting the keyboard out on the nature strip and I'd fork out $19.95 at my local supermarket the next time I picked up the bread and milk for a replacement keyboard. So the home computer market has modularised, and in doing so, much of the equipment has become disposable. Has your mouse stopped working? Just throw it away, buy a new one. What about your USB memory stick? Is it starting to kick errors? Just rip one out of your next Wheaties packet. And this might sound bizarre to some. Is your printer out of ink? Well, throw it away, buy a new one. In 25 years from now, if an error appears on our computer screen, are we just going to throw away the whole computer and buy a new one? In this episode, we look at modularisation in the 21st century and the commodity items we call Macs and personal computers.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Scientists in the United States have made a breakthrough with the wireless transfer of energy. Does this mean the end of portable battery chargers for mobile phones and laptops? NASA launches the Space Shuttle Atlantis, embarking on a 12-day mission to the International Space Station. And Adam Turner asks, who's watching the watches? All this and much, much more on Australia's premier technology talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But right now, here's what's been making technology headlines this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, terrorists use Google Earth to plot an airport attack. America embraces Apple fever over the upcoming iPhone release. Wireless energy transfer becomes a reality. LG enters the GPS navigation market. And big brands are now targeting tech-savvy women. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Four terror suspects arrested last week by federal agents in the United States allegedly used Google Earth to plot an attack on the John F. Kennedy International Airport. The allegations made by American authorities have raised fresh concerns over the amount of geospatial information freely available through Google's popular online mapping application. Director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, or NGA, Robert Murette, recently told Associated Press that the US government should consider censoring commercial satellite photos of security-sensitive locations. The revelations come after British newspaper The Daily Telegraph reported in January that terrorists attacking British bases in Basra are using aerial footage from Google Earth to facilitate their attacks. Google said it paid close attention to concerns surrounding Google Earth, but noted that commercial high-resolution satellite and aerial imagery was already widely available from numerous sources, and that Google Earth images are not real-time. While Apple Corporation is yet to sell one single iPhone in the United States, the company's shares hit record highs last week as shareholders hoped the new combination iPod telephone would be popular with technologists. The iPhone, due to be launched in the US on the 29th of June, is touted by analysts as a so-called breakout product for Apple, boosting share prices, which have already risen nearly 30% since the iPhone's announcement in January. Mr. Robert Semple, an analyst for Credit Suisse, has forecast gross margins for the iPhone at least 40%. Semple said in a research note last week that the device could sell 5 million units this year and 15 million in 2008. On the other hand, some skeptics say the product's success is far from guaranteed, noting concerns over iPhone's price tag, lack of keyboard, and the fact that it's locked on the AT&T mobile network. Researchers from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology last week said they have developed a new wireless energy transfer technology capable of powering a 60-watt light globe from a power source 2 meters away. A professor of physics at MIT said that's more than enough energy to supply an average laptop, and that the concept behind the technology was based on two resonant objects on the same frequency being able to efficiently exchange energy. Researchers have dubbed the project Y-tricity, and plan to refine the technology to make it more compact and more efficient. MIT researchers are confident that they can make the system reliable enough within the next few years for consumers to recharge laptops, PDAs, and mobile telephones without the need for cables. Some Australian physicists, however, are sceptical about the practicalities of Y-tricity. Dr. Jeff Anstis of the University of Technology, Sydney, told the ABC in November last year that the challenge is finding a magic frequency that does not also affect living organisms and pose health risks to humans. LG Electronics Australia has announced the launch of two portable GPS units priced at the entry-level end of the personal navigation market. As well as LCD touchscreen operation, the devices can provide motorists with specific road names in addition to the standard Turn Now-style directions. An LG spokesman told Smart House News last week, the GPS industry has been identified as a sustainable and high-growth market. LG Electronics believed that it was time to bring its car navigation expertise directly to Australian consumers. The LN800 features a 4-inch screen and automatic day-night mode for just under $700 Australian dollars. The LN500 features a 3.5-inch screen and retails for just under $600 Australian dollars. Both models have 512 MB of internal memory and an SD slot for memory expansion. An article in the New York Times last week says a growing number of women are now embracing consumer electronics, just as the technologies are reaching out to embrace them. Behind this quiet revolution are engineers and designers who are bringing a so-called feminine sensibility to products historically shaped by masculine tastes, habits, and requirements. The observation comes after NPD Group, a market analysis firm, noted that women bought slightly more than half the digital cameras in the United States in the first 4 months of 2007, compared with just 48% a year ago. Only a few years back, many consumer electronics companies would simply change the colour of a mobile phone in an effort to appeal to the female market. But these days, engineers are changing the design of some consumer items in an effort to better appeal to women. Laptops are being made with bigger keys for longer fingernails. Nikon and Olympus have produced lighter, more compact and easy-to-use digital SLR cameras. And, who would have thought, portable dual-screen DVD players for the car are being advertised for the first time in Cosmopolitan magazine. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Hitwise released the Australian top 20 websites for April. Number one, google.com.au.
Something somewhere is going to have to change.
Look, I spend a lot of money on the copper in our street. Never see a guy in the street cleaning it or anything.
They do. They come out in the middle of the night and polish it.
Oh, is that what that
is? Make it look nice.
Hope you're all still with us out there.
Sorry.
TiVo's coming to Australia.
Are we excited?
I am. I'm very excited by
Adam's
this.
Excited
is
too.
Is it only going to work for Channel 7? Because that would be less exciting.
Not so much software. No. Not Safari. Well, it's true Apple style. They're having problems with it. So.
Encoded in the track is not only the name, but the email address.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of the person who downloaded downloaded it.
You'll never believe this, but sometimes networks run behind schedule.
So developers...
petrol stations.
Or pizza restaurants.
Now you're thinking.
Oh, that'll get back.
You're still having problems fathoming this, I can tell.
They must be downloading illegal movies and doing things like that if you're churning through the bandwidth, but that's not the case.
Yep, right, moving on.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Here we are again. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, everybody. Off to a bit of a...
I don't think so, McColm. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, everybody. Dr. Ron here this week, in charge of the panel. Yes, Andrew's left me the keys to the radio station, perhaps rather foolishly, perhaps rather optimistically, I'm not sure. He's currently on assignment. He's been in South Australia this last weekend. He's had absolutely no time in Melbourne whatsoever with his family or work or anything, let alone Tech Talk Radio. So here I am. Not quite on my lonesome, though. I've had a great deal of assistance, support and help from fellow panellist Graham Callaghan. How are you this week, Graham?
I'm well, thanks, Dr. Ron.
It's rather lonely in the studio, isn't it? Well, I mean, present company excluded, of course. It's lovely to be here with you, but it's rather bare. And
It's definitely an unusual feeling to Tech Talk Radio.
It's a very unusual feeling, isn't it? I've got some trivia for you.
Yes.
I think this is the first Tech Talk Radio where Andrew has not been the host.
Yes, that's probably right.
If you discard or disregard some of the summer series installments...
Yep.
I did a little bit of digging when I was getting ready for this episode. The first Tech Talk Radio went to air on the 29th of November, 2004.
Right.
So Andrew's hosted every program.
Since November 2004.
Coming up to 3 years. He's done pretty well, hasn't he?
That's very good. It's quite a track record.
It is.
It's no wonder he needed a week off.
I'd be running away further than South Australia just quietly if it was me, I think, after 3 years. Welcome to wherever you happen to be listening to us. You might be listening to us live. You might be listening to us on one of the many fine community radio stations in Australia. You might be listening on the pod. You might be listening
to a station overseas.
Maybe overseas. You might be listening on one of the streams because we stream the program live.
That's right.
From Melbourne, Australia. So welcome. Tech Talk Radio is produced every Monday. If it's a first time listen for you, we're a technology talk show. We talk about everything to do with computers, internet, mobile phones, laptops, anything that grabs the attention.
Anything technological.
Technological? Exactly right. And you can email us as well to communicate with us right now on air at techtalkradio.com.au or feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. That will find us also.
Or you can ring us on the phone.
You can.
And that number is...
What's that number, Graham?
That's 1300.
Yep.
664-882.
And if you're listening internationally and 1300 numbers are completely meaningless to you, plus 613-90-125-362.
And if you ring that number and leave us a message, we'll be able to incorporate your comments into our thoughts for the next show, and we may even be able to incorporate your message into the next show.
Yes, so leave a message there. Record away. The mailbox is unlimited.
Yes.
Now... podcasting. In addition to our normal podcast, we've also got two new ones that have been introduced fairly recently, which you might not know about. There's a news podcast. If you're bandwidth impaired, like Andrew mentioned a couple of weeks back, you might be living in rural Australia, like somewhere like Kilsyth, or your time is of the essence and you just want the short news delivered to your iPod or your MP3 player every week, there's a news podcast. And there's also Adam Turner's View from the Couch. Adam Turner is a regular contributor. We'll be hearing from him on this episode of Tech Talk Radio. And you can download just the Couch podcast as well, if that's what you need. So go to our website, www.techtalkradio.com.au. Click on podcast, click on how to subscribe, and all the information is there.
There you go.
In addition to that, streaming. We've also got a Windows stream and a Shoutcast and iTunes stream, and they're both running during the production of this episode.
Fantastic.
And again, go to the Tech Talk Radio website. All the information's there. We've also got forums. We've got Frapper Maps. We've got blogs.
Basically, we've got the whole range of things. It's all on the website, www.techtalkradio.com.au.
Go there. Everything's explained.
What's been in the news this week, Graham?
All sorts of good stuff, Graham. Now, you did the news.
I did.
That was terrific.
That was another new experience.
That was really good. It was very good. There's lots new, aren't there, in this episode? Wireless energy transfer.
What on earth? We were talking about this during
I'm
the week.
I'm loving this story.
Isn't it great?
It is. This is from MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. These people come up with all the best ideas, it seems.
Right.
When you read about the place. They're moving electricity, power.
Yes.
From one point to another wirelessly. Now, this might not seem... We've had lots of wireless technology around the place.
But we've been doing this for 100 years with radio waves, haven't we?
No. Radio waves move information from one place to another,
right,
but not the power.
Okay. The actual... We're talking about the actual power. What powers something?
Yeah. So even if you've got a radio receiver, it still needs a power source to make that signal loud enough for you to hear.
Yeah, well, it does. You have to plug it in, have a battery or something like
Something like that, yeah. Now, this is a way of moving power through radio waves, and significant amounts of power. The demonstration they've done lights up a 60-watt light globe.
Which is pretty bright.
That's enough. 60 watts is around about a sort of a small to medium-sized laptop.
Yeah, absolutely. So that means that we can potentially dispense with the plug packs, the battery packs.
Well,
that we need to recharge laptops.
I think that's the aim. Perhaps not to dispense with them completely, but to make them less obtrusive in certain places. So you might have one of these devices on your desk, and as long as your laptop is on your desk, somewhere within the predefined area, might be 1 or 2 metres sort of area.
Right.
Then maybe your laptop will be able to derive its power and perhaps charge its battery off this power source without having to have something plugged into it.
So it might work like a wireless hotspot does in a similar way. It has a coverage area and you have a device which you plug in, and then it can transmit the energy to the devices which will receive it.
Exactly. And I think the other big application for this is going to be cell phones, PDAs, MP3 players. So that instead of having to have a cable, find the cable, plug it in, charge it up, if you just put it on the table, it might be on your bedside table, might be on your desk, might be, you know, somewhere in your house, put it on the table within the zone, it'll charge up without having to plug anything in.
Speaking of the zone at home, do you have a zone at home where you have where you have a power board plugged into another power board, which has got 8 double adapters plugged into another power board, and you've got dozens of power supplies for your phone,
yep,
your laptop, your other phone, someone else in the house's phone, all sorts of things. You've got power packs everywhere.
I've got a collection of plug packs like that. Yeah. Do you leave them plugged in all the time?
No.
You switch them off, do you?
When I'm recharging them, do you mean?
Like, do you switch off the plug packs when you're not using them?
Right. No, they would just stay on. They're always on, so I can just stick the jack up the...
Have you ever measured how much current they pull out of the power?
There's probably a lot of power... What, when they're not being used?
When they're not being used, just sitting there doing nothing.
Well, my first reaction would be they wouldn't be pulling any power at all, but they do get
warm.
But
they would, yeah.
Yeah, so we're wasting power that way.
We are. Ah. So it'd be interesting to see how this new technology might deal with that problem in terms of what its idling power is.
But is this new technology? Because I was thinking about this, right? I've got an electric toothbrush at home on the advice of my dentist.
Right.
He says, use an electric toothbrush.
Okay.
So I do. Now, it goes in a stand, and it's got a little thing that goes up the bottom of the toothbrush, and it recharges on the stand.
Right.
But there are no electrical contacts.
There are no electrical contacts?
No. So it's like it's some sort of induction technology. And I thought, well, this must be similar to this wireless technology.
Well, if you think about it, this is just to get a tiny bit technical for a moment.
Yeah.
A power transformer that transforms AC voltages from one voltage to another is just two coils of wire that are very close together.
So when I'm recharging my toothbrush, in effect, I'm putting the two coils in close proximity to each other.
You're probably putting them right immediately, one on top of the other. So
is it similar to this, or am I?
I think it is, except that the transformer isn't quite as much as finely tuned as what the thing that MIT are doing, which allows them to have those two coils instead of having to be right close coupled, right.
They're
close to each other, almost in contact.
They're virtually touching, but there's just no electrical contact.
These two coils are a couple of metres apart.
Right.
And they're tuned very carefully. It's all based on having a resonant frequency, like a tuning fork, that if you knock it, naturally vibrates at that frequency. This is the electrical equivalent of that.
It's amazing stuff. There were some sceptics, though, weren't there? In the news, I think you were talking about some analysts in Australia that were saying... Yeah, it might work, but we have to be careful that we don't jeopardise the safety of people by firing energy around the place.
That's right, and it's interesting that in the MIT, if you go to the website, there's a photograph of the device with the 60-watt light globe lit up.
Wow.
And the team, there's the six team members sitting in between the two coils.
Now, they're quite obviously making the point of sitting in between saying, look at us, there's nothing to worry about. Yeah, we'll stick our head in the microwave next and press the star button. It's all good. It's all for the good That's of the country. Right. It's all in the name of science. Some Australian physicists, Dr. Jeff Anstis of the University of Technology Sydney, told the ABC the challenge is finding a magic frequency.
Yes.
That's safe for everybody and everything.
And it's also got to be an effective frequency.
Yeah.
And that's going to couple into the size of the devices too. So you'd imagine that a higher frequency device that might have more damaging radiation might be the smaller end of the devices. So there might be a trade-off there in terms of getting it small enough to be practical, but large enough so the radiation is less harmful.
Absolutely. So,
and the demonstration unit has got quite large coils. Probably, what would you say, looking at that photograph, about a metre diameter coils?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is proof of concept at the moment in the laboratory, isn't it?
Yep, it's the start of the process. But it's an interesting process and it'll be one to watch.
Very good. Very interesting. We'll certainly keep abreast of that technology from MIT over the next few months. We'll let you know what's going on. Terrorists use Google Earth to plot airport attack. Graham, that was in the news.
Oh, dear.
Is this media sensationalisation?
I had to force myself to read that bit in the news, but...
Against your better judgment?
Well, it's all information that's already out there. There's not a great deal more information there than you could take by having photographs taken from tall buildings or photographs even taken from street level if you were detailed enough about it. Or
this is the thing.
From light planes.
It doesn't have to be Google Earth. It could be one of the common portable navigation devices, little GPS devices. They'll come with maps
pre-installed. They'll come with all the maps pre-installed.
You've got something
There's
like
lots
that.
Of aerial photographs are out and about around there on all different services. Google have just made it very easy for the general public to see them. In the case of terrorists or people wanting to do bad things, they probably well before Google Earth were aware of what was publicly available.
Of course, you could open a street directory and say, well, that shows me exactly where the airport is, and
yeah.
I know I can use this road and there's a gate there and so on.
Yeah, it's got the gates marked, it's got where the storage areas are.
Have you used Street View?
Not a great deal. No, I had a look at it just out of curiosity.
I cast my eyes across a news item tonight as I was running out the door. I didn't read
They're
it properly.
They're starting to censor it.
They are. They're censoring. Google is censoring themselves.
Yes.
That's a milestone. That's interesting. Now, Street View, for those of you that don't know, but you may have used Google Earth, it lets you actually zoom in at a street level and look around at a street level. And I think it's created by people who have contributed photographs.
I think it's a bit more high-tech than that. I think Google have actually got vans with cameras mounted in them that drive down the streets taking photographs.
Is that right?
That's right.
So they go...
And it's technology license that they bought from some other company, and I can't...
They'll go to popular locations, and they'll do a 360-degree panoramic type...
They'll just drive... They've got a 360-degree camera mounted on the van, and they'll just drive down the street taking photographs, and they'll just drive the grid.
That's unbelievable. And the way that you see that there are Street View views available is that there's a special icon, I think, isn't there, on the mapping overlay
on the Google Maps.
That's right. So you can say, oh, look, there's a Street View view, if you like, from that position. I'll click on that, and you can do a 360-degree look at the area.
Yep, and you can see people coming out of unsavoury locations, and you can see people's cats sitting in their windows.
Wow.
In their flats.
You could potentially see number plates on cars that are parked out the front of addresses and things like that.
Oh, quite possibly you could, yes. All kinds of information that might... That might just have an unfortunate consequence.
But again, as Google have said in response to these accusations about terrorists using Google Earth, the information is not real time. So it's a particular image that they've taken at a particular time, might be 6 months old. It's not going to help you real time.
But even so, just knowing that sometime in the last couple of years you were at such and such a location might, for complicated reasons, complicate your life.
Sounds like your life would already be fairly complex if
you're
worried about it being further complicated.
People are concerned about this stuff.
They are. It is. It's a concern for some people. Apple fever. Graham, iPods. Do you own an iPod?
No.
Are you going to own an iPod?
Probably not.
No. What about an iPhone when it comes to Australia?
Is it going to come to Australia?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, so do I.
I can't see why it wouldn't, except Andrew has been a bit sceptical in the past, and I am as well. They've built something which is old technology, certainly in our environment. We need something that's at least third generation technology for it to be a new product and for technologists to get excited about it.
Yeah, because the natural network for it to work on here would be the GSM network. It's designed for a GSM type network, isn't it?
That's right, it is, yeah.
A 2.5G, what they call an edge network.
That's right.
And it's limited specifically to the AT&T network of that type in the US, which was formerly called Singular.
That's the one.
So if that was to move over here, I mean, Telstra have already got a shutdown date for their GSM network.
They have.
So, and we're going to be moving to the what Telstra are calling Next G, which is a 3G network on 850 megahertz, which replaces both the GSM and the CDMA networks. So, yeah, for iPhone to come out here, you'd really want it on that network rather than on one of the old GSM networks.
Well, I think
But Apple haven't ruled it out in anything they've said.
No.
They haven't made any comment to give you too much hope that it's actually going to happen, but they haven't ruled it out either.
Some technologists have said about the Apple fever that America's currently in the grips of. I mean, Apple hasn't sold one single iPhone, I think, as you said in the news, Graham.
Well, that's right. It's slated for release on the 29th of June, is that right?
I think that is correct, 29th of June. I think the other thing which people are keen to learn is, will Apple make the iPhone open so that people can write applications for it? They've always been very guarded about this. They don't like having development platforms.
Yeah, there's a limit to, but of course people write lots of applications for the Macintosh operating system and all of that, and there apparently is going to be a way to write applications for the iPhone, but it's going to be somewhat restrictive from what I hear. I haven't read all the details about it, but I have seen people on blogs and so on, developers who are screaming for their iPhone so that they can start developing applications before the release.
Well, I can understand from Apple's point of view that it would look bad for them if they had a gadget or a product that was released and within a couple of weeks they had reports of it crashing and having software problems with the phone, if that was being caused by dodgy applications.
By third-party applications, yeah. That would be bad. And that's one advantage that Apple have always had, that the stability has been improved by the fact that their Macintosh operating system only runs on an Apple Macintosh computer. Mm. So they've got control over the hardware and the software, which makes it a lot more stable, whereas Windows has always had to contend with everybody and everybody's
writing what we call
manufactured
drivers,
hardware and drivers
and applications and everything else. Yeah, exactly. I counted the number of buttons on my new phone this week, Graham. I've got my Sony Ericsson W850i, which is going along frightfully well at the moment.
How many buttons has it got?
Well, apart from the keypad and apart from the power button.
Okay, so that's 12, 13 buttons you've knocked out already.
Yeah, it's got 14.
14 buttons apart from those.
Correct. So these are navigation buttons. They let you go left, right, up, down.
Four.
There's a select button.
Five.
There's a clear button.
Six.
A return button to go back a level. There's a headphones button, which takes you to an online music store.
It's a
function key which you can pre-program.
Yep.
There's another one to bring up a menu. There's an image up-down browsing pair of buttons. Guess how many buttons are on the iPhone?
None.
Close.
One.
On-off. Well, maybe apart from on-off. Oh, I don't know. Maybe it does on-off as well. It's like a home function button.
Oh, okay.
To take you back to the front screen, to the home state, I believe.
Okay, yep.
And everything else is done with the touch screen.
Yep.
So you can move everything around with your finger by touching the screen.
Well, that's sensible design, I would have thought.
Well, it is. It is. It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yes.
Hopefully, fingers crossed, a 3G version on the horizon. I hope. We all live in hope, don't we?
Absolutely.
Hope's a wonderful thing. LG enters the GPS market. Now, you've got a portable GPS device, GPS navigation type device, haven't you?
Yep. Well, I've been playing with some of the software that loads onto my PDA, but my parents, in fact, have just bought the new...
not the LG one.
No, the TomTom.
Right, the TomTom, yes.
The 1XL, I think it's called.
How have they gone with it?
Well, it looks like a rather nice device.
Okay.
It's also only got one button, which is an on-off button.
Good.
And everything else is done by the touchscreen. It's got a nice big, bright touchscreen, 4-point-something-inch display, which is really good.
Okay.
So, I'll tell you what, if they're competing with that quality of machine, then LG have got work cut out for them.
Good.
But I haven't seen the LG device.
Right. So I've only seen pictures of the LG device, but let me ask you this about the new one that your parents have just bought.
Yeah.
And this differentiates the LG from a lot of the other ones that are on the market at the moment, like the TomToms, the Garmins and the Magellans and things like that. Does it have a text-to-speech function so it can actually read out the names of streets, roads and highways?
The TomTom does not, or the model TomTom I got, or my parents got, does not.
Right.
But the LG one, I believe, does, or at least some of the LG models do.
Yes. Well, I read that this LG, or the new LG ones that have just been announced during the last week, they have a text-to-speech technology, so it will actually say, turn left at Swanson Street, rather than take the next left. It'll actually interpret the text of the name for you and read it out.
I wonder how it will go with names whose pronunciation is non-obvious from its spelling.
It will be interesting. It'll be very interesting to see. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan for this episode. We'll be coming up now with Adam Turner. Now, regular listeners will know of Adam, who has his regular view from the couch. And this week he's asking the question, who watches the watches?
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Forget Maxwell's smart shoe phone and the cone of silence. Today, the fight between good and evil takes place amid the ones and zeros of cyberspace. But what happens when someone starts watching the watches? Recently, the Chicago Tribune decided to find out just how hard it was to track CIA spies on the internet. So it started digging around in commercial online databases that anyone can access, some subscription-based but many free. The results came as quite a shock to the spooks at Langley. The Tribune managed to compile a directory of more than 2,600 CIA employees and two dozen secret CIA facilities around the United States. We're not just talking about the name of the intern who works in the mailroom. We're talking about the details of operatives working deep undercover around the world. People whose lives would be in danger if they were found to be American spies. The Tribune didn't name names, but it posed the obvious question. If a newspaper could do this, who else could? The moral of the story is, the internet doesn't forget. Once your information is released online, it's impossible to get it back, and it's not hard for someone to join the dots and find out a lot about you. There are already free online sites that do a basic job of this. Take a look at zoominfo.com. It's a free site that searches the web for information about people and then cross-references it to build profiles on people. I discovered the site when I was doing a Google search on someone before I interviewed them for a newspaper story. Try putting in your own name and see what comes up. I ran my name through it and Adam Turner returned about 150 results, with me at number 3. I also came in at number 7, 30 and 39. Because it's an automated service, it doesn't have the intelligence to realise that the Adam Turner who writes for the Sydney Morning Herald is the same Adam Turner who writes for The Age, and then the same Adam Turner who writes for IT Wire. None of this really bothers me because I didn't see anything there you couldn't find in Google. Put Adam Turner into Google and I'm the first, third, sixth and seventh results. The scary thing is that zoominfo.com is just an algorithm, so imagine what a professional researcher could find. As the Chicago Tribune discovered, you can find stuff even the CIA doesn't want you to know.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, your host for this episode. And I'm joined by the more than capable Graham Callaghan, longtime panellist here. Now, zoominfo.com. Now, there's a website for you. That was a very interesting view from the couch. Thank you, Adam. What did you think, Graham? Imagine what a professional researcher could find online about your identity.
Yes, it's. I did the thing of putting my name into Google, and yep, Oddly enough, Tech Talk Radio pops up as a top result. But,
oh, does it, if you search for your name. Now, is this your experience? If you have information about yourself out there in the wild, as we like to call it, on the internet, is it there for good?
I think so, yeah. It doesn't die.
Doesn't? There's always something somewhere in some far-flung corner of an archive of a website somewhere.
That's right, yeah. Even if you take the website down, there's these online archives that you can go back to and find stuff.
It's ironic that there's a whole industry being built around what we call SEO, search engine optimization, in an effort to get your ranking as high as it can possibly be and get as much exposure as you can as can possibly be obtained. But there are some people out there, for example, people who work for intelligence agencies, that would want the opposite. They'd want search minimization optimization, wouldn't they?
Well, they would, too.
I think that's invented a term. Yes, but indeed. Thank you very much,
Adam. It's a serious issue, though, and you wonder what the solution is to it. Do we need a Ministry of Truth to go out and correct the public record to remove inappropriate references? How do we organise it?
Thanks, George Orwell.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you to GD, who sent us an email on air at techtalkradio.com.au. Apparently the streams are alive and well, so that is good news. You can email us as well. You can post on our forum if you'd like to communicate with us. Just a quick note as well before we get back into the program. We've got a couple of giveaways. Graham didn't get to mention this at the top of the show, but the first one, a few weeks back, we were joined by Robert Broomhead from the Wireless Institute of Australia, and he came into Tech Talk Radio to talk to us about amateur radio. He left us with a number of books about amateur radio theory and about how to get your new foundation class radio license. Now, we've still got a few of these books left. If you'd like one of these books at absolutely no charge or expense to yourself, post on the forum, I think, as to why you should have one, what your career aspirations are in the field of amateur radio, what you'd like to do with the hobby, what you're doing at the moment, perhaps.
That's a good idea.
Do you like that idea?
Background of your interest in electronics. Anyone who's got an interest in electronics can do this.
Absolutely.
You just go to the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
I think so. But put a post there and we'll have a read and judges' decisions will be final. No correspondence will be entered into, et cetera, et cetera.
All of that.
Tech Talk Radio panellists are not eligible to apply. Graham, sorry about that.
They're good books.
They're excellent books. So if you'd like one, then do that. Now, the other giveaway is coffee mugs. I'm about to do another coffee mug run.
Oh, wow.
We've got two or three exclusive collector's item first run coffee mugs still available. You'll never see these again. They are indeed collector's items, and you need one. Only $12.50 or $25 for two. Go to the website now to order and click on About Us merchandise for more information. So if you'd like a Tech Talk Radio coffee mug, support us.
Yes.
Yes, that would be very nice. And we've had people who have bought them, Graham, and I'm labouring on this far too long, and they've sent us photos of where the coffee mug's been, a bit like the garden gnome from the garden that goes on holidays to Europe and pops up under the Eiffel Tower and things like that. So keep the...
How did Tony go with his one?
With Tony Blair? Yeah, there's one photo of Tony Blair on the website drinking from one of our coffee mugs, which is absolutely wonderful. Enough of this ridiculous self-indulgence. Now, something in the technology world, something very exciting, happened during the week.
That's 10, 9, 8, 7, main engine start, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and liftoff of Space Shuttle Atlantis to assemble the framework for the science laboratories of tomorrow.
Houston now controlling.
Houston Atlantis, roll program.
Roger, roll, Atlantis.
Atlantis' roll maneuver is complete. The orbiter's in a heads-down position, on course for a 51.6 degree, 137 by 36 statute mile orbit. All systems in good shape. Engines throttling down as Atlantis prepares to maneuver through the area of maximum dynamic pressure on the vehicle in the lower atmosphere. Already 7 miles away from the Kennedy Space Center at an altitude of 5 miles.
Was indeed a successful launch of Space Shuttle Atlantis, STS-117. About 8 minutes later, the external fuel tank was jettisoned. And we're going to be hearing about that in a few moments as well. Now, we're currently about 2 days and 11 hours into the latest shuttle mission. It's going remarkably well from all accounts. And the launch, this one was originally scheduled for mid-March, but it was delayed after a severe hailstorm ruptured the insulating foam on the spacecraft's tank.
That foam again.
Yeah, more of the foam.
Endless trouble with that foam, don't they?
They do. They really do. But it's old. The whole thing's old technology, though. The whole design, isn't it, Graeme? The computer equipment inside. It's something that was designed in the 1970s, the space shuttle.
Yeah, that's right. And it's had a few upgrades here and there, and they've changed a lot. But, obviously, it's on its downhill run, if you like. It's already been slated for retirement, so there's a lot of improvements that haven't been made. And, yeah, it's old technology. They have had some trouble with it on this mission. They had some damage to a thermal blanket and so on that happened at some point.
Okay. Let's have a listen 8 minutes later. This is when the external tank was jettisoned.
Main engine cutoff confirmed 8 minutes 35 seconds into the flight. Separation of the fuel tank has also been confirmed. The crew handheld photography setup will be underway shortly with a plus X maneuver that's managed by the commander on board, Rick Sterko. Atlantis following away. You can see the thruster jets firing as the orbiter is being maneuvered for the handheld photography.
Atlantis, Houston, we show a nominal MECO. Ohms 1 is not required.
Now, it's amazing what you can find. Amazing what you can find on the internet about all of those codes and abbreviations and keywords and all those.
And what they mean.
And what they mean. Now, I thought, a nominal MECO, what the hell does that mean? They come up with all these buzzwords and codes and things. Apparently, MECO is simply an abbreviation for main engine cutoff. So that means that they've actually reached the spot where they want to be in orbit. And they've turned off the main engine. The other thing which...
You have to turn off the engine before they run out of fuel in that big tank, because if it runs dry, it'll damage the engines.
There you go. So it's similar to...
So that tank is powering the engines in the space shuttle itself, the three big engines at the back. And if they run out of fuel before they turn them off, then they do a lot of damage to them.
Amazing. The other thing which was mentioned there in that little excerpt from the NASA mission control was Ohms 1 is not required. Apparently, OMS is a thrusting sequence. It stands for Orbital Maneuvering System. So if they're a little bit out of whack of where they're supposed to be, they can fire thrusters and they can move into orbit, into the right orbit.
These OMS, the Ohms units, are the two big pods sitting either side of the tail fin at the back of the space shuttle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's right around there that they've got these thermal blankets that cover those, and one of those has had a little bit of a tear, and it's come away from the space shuttle, a little bit of a triangular area.
Right.
About 6 inches long, about 4 inches the other way, and the triangle down the other side.
So what can they do about this?
Well, that's what they're working on at the moment. Mm. Apparently, there is a plan to...
A cunning plan?
Well, they're working on the plan, whether they're going to add it to the third of the existing spacewalks or whether they're going to add a fourth spacewalk to try and repair this damage or patch it up in some way so that it doesn't cause a problem on re-entry. Because, of course, any disruption to the heat shielding, it's a double-fold problem because it's a gap in the heat shielding, but it's also a change in the shape which creates turbulence, which makes the heating even worse.
Right.
So that could cause a big problem on re-entry when they try to come home.
All right. Well, we'll watch with interest. We wish NASA and all of the scientists there and the astronauts all the best.
Absolutely.
For a safe return to Earth, obviously.
And we'll be watching very closely. And there's a huge amount of information about this on the NASA website, nasa.gov.
NASA.gov. There are, Graeme, there's huge amounts. You're right. You can wilf away for hours, can't you?
Oh, you can lose a whole night on that NASA website just far too easily.
Wilfies, what was I
Speaking
looking for?
Speaking from experience.
Speaking from experience. Coming up on Tech Talk Radio, you're with Dr. Ron and Graeme. We're going to be talking about the commoditization of technology. Have computers become commodity items? Are PCs and Macs at their lowest price point in the market, or have they got further to go? Can we live without them? All these questions we will ask and more in just a few moments on Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, your host for this episode, and I'm joined by the Graham Callaghan, who's sitting on the other side of the panel from me for a change. It's all a bit odd, isn't it? It's a bit surreal.
Feels very odd, as we said, yeah.
It's a bit like we're in a different dimension or something.
Cheerio to Andrew out there listening somewhere, by the way.
Hello, Andrew. He's been on assignment, Graham, in South Australia. He's going to have a fantastic story for us next week, I'm sure.
Good.
And he's been with Mark as well, Mark Diggins, who's also a regular panellist.
And they've been up to mischief together, have they?
Yes, they have. Technological mischief.
I can't wait to hear about
all their adventures next week. Now, on to serious business.
Yeah, what were you talking? You said commoditisation.
I may have invented a word. So apologies to the English language. I'm not sure, but...
Well, what does it mean?
It means technology becoming a commodity item, a must-have, a thing that... A commodity is something that's freely traded, something that is in continuous demand. It's even something that's just become so necessary we can't live without it. If you think commodity items, think bread, milk, pick up your computer from the supermarket as well. What do you reckon? Have personal computers become commodity items, Graham? Is a PC or a Mac or is broadband or any other thing that we use today in terms of technology, mobile phone, is this now an absolute necessity for day-to-day living?
Well, you mentioned picking one up down the supermarket.
Yeah.
You can certainly pick up your mobile phone down the supermarket. You can buy a prepaid mobile phone at the supermarket every day of the week.
You can buy keyboards, mice, mouses. You can buy printers from the supermarket.
Certainly can.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I've seen an actual complete PC at the supermarket yet, but it's getting close.
It's got to be getting close.
Certainly, from my experience at work, that line between how much effort do you spend on repairing something as opposed to when you just say, let's buy a new one.
This is exactly what
that line is getting a lot closer.
Well, that's it, Graham. We've actually got to the point now, I think, where a lot of technology which we use or take for granted on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to maybe 10, 15 years ago, these pieces of technology have become disposable. They're consumables, aren't they? What's the life expectancy of a mobile phone? If you get a new mobile phone on a new plan, would you be expecting to still be using that in 2 years' time? Would you be expecting to be still using it in 5 years'
time? If you're with some carriers, you might need to still be using it in 2 years' time because you'll still be paying for the thing.
Maybe that's the case. But I'm finding now that we just throw things away if they don't work anymore. You used to work for an organisation that fixed terminals, computer monitors. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, my first job and even when I started my original job, one of the things we did was we repaired terminals that were used on mainframe computer systems. These talked serial and just displayed on the screen and sent keystrokes back. And
okay, so the sorts of things
they weren't like, a full computer.
So if you for example have a job in a bank or a data processing area, you might be familiar with this sort of concept. You've
just
got a dumb terminal with a screen, a keyboard, and no computer attached.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
So you used to fix these.
Yeah, I used to fix them. And
what used to go wrong with them?
Oh, there were various things that would go wrong. So there were capacitors would fail in the screens.
Ooh.
Or...
technical electronics.
Yep, one of the basic electronic components within the screens that would tend to fail. Or the ICs, the integrated circuit, the chips that were the line drivers that would talk to the serial line that talked all the way back to the big central computer.
Right, yep.
They would tend to fail, particularly if there were power problems or near-missed lightning strikes on the site or stuff like that. So, and we used to unsolder those from the circuit boards and solder new ones in.
So you used to actually get these items, you'd pick up a screwdriver, you'd open up the case, you'd get a soldering iron,
yeah.
You'd detect where the fault was,
yes.
You'd replace the faulty item at a component level,
yes.
Put it all back together, return it to the customer.
That's right.
If my monitor blows up today, it goes out on the nature strip. I go down to Officeworks, I buy a new one for $99.95.
Yep, because the time it takes to disassemble the unit, find out what's wrong with it, repair it, desolder it, resolder it, clean it up so it's presentable to give back to the customer, all of that sort of stuff, that might take 2 or 3 hours of workshop labour, which might be worth $200 or $300.
I think you've hit the nail right on the head, Graham. We're talking about value for money, aren't we? We're talking about the cost of purchasing a new item versus the maintenance or the repair of that item.
And what's a 17-inch LCD display worth these days?
A few hundred dollars, is it? Something like that?
Yep, somewhere around about the $300 mark, isn't it?
And if exactly right. And if you're...
So that's very close to the repair of your faulty monitor.
That's it. That's exactly right. Look, I recently quoted a customer, Graham, in my little internet/PC business that I run.
Yep.
And they wanted to migrate their old Windows 98 PC to a new Win XP machine, Windows XP. Now, it was a new machine for the customer, but they bought it secondhand off eBay. Now, they wanted a quote to move their My Documents folder and their email and their favourites. They wanted me to configure their scanner for them and their printer and their webcam. They wanted me to set up Big Pond internet cable on the new machine.
Yep.
They wanted me to maybe upgrade the RAM as well, their memory, and just give it the once over. And I gave them a quote, and they were quite happy. And they were happy for me to do the work. But jokingly, they said, I could have bought a brand new computer pre-configured.
Yeah, because there's 2 or 3 hours working in that. There's the cost of the extra memory chips that you upgraded.
That's right.
There's a call-out fee to the site to actually do it.
Exactly. Exactly right. So we're actually now finding that the cost of maintenance and repairs to equipment is just, it's too high. It doesn't happen anymore.
That's right.
How long ago did you used to pull apart monitors and replace components?
Oh, I haven't actually done that seriously for quite some time.
Yeah.
We do still do some of that work at work, but only on exotic equipment, unusual equipment, equipment that's got a special application.
Yep, yep.
Where it's still cost effective to do it rather than replace it.
But yeah.
On your average computer monitor, nah. And terminals that we were talking about originally, we were talking about the terminals we use,
yep.
Not even used anymore. Because you can, off the shelf, you buy a PC from one supplier,
yes.
And you buy a terminal emulation program from another supplier,
yes.
And you just put them together, and you've got a solution that does the terminal, but it's a PC.
It's a PC running in a terminal emulation mode.
That's right.
Yeah, I've had exactly the same experience. So,
the changes, and that's that level of repair, not only is it not feasible anymore, but it's not even possible anymore because the whole structure's changed.
What we're seeing more and more now as well is because of this shift in the way that we manage our personal technology, it's becoming consumable, it's becoming disposable. A lot of stuff goes out, as I said before, on the nature strip or into the rubbish bin or into landfill, and this is becoming a big problem. If I opened up the bottom drawer of a desk in your junk room, Graham, how many mobile phones would I find in there?
Several mobile phones, yep.
What about pages? What about...
a couple of pages.
Yeah, other things, other consumer-type items that we use.
And number of them.
they date, don't they? They date, yeah. And then we've got nothing.
Well, when was the last time you replaced your mobile phone because it didn't work anymore?
Well, my mobile phone gets replaced just because I have the offer to... An offer is made to me to update it.
And so you're replacing a mobile phone that isn't even faulty.
Correct. I am. I'm replacing.
And so am I.
Yeah. This technology is nothing wrong with it.
Yep.
But we're throwing it away.
So that's a definite indication of commoditisation, just because you need some new feature or because it's a fashion item.
The Australian Mobile Telecommunications Association, or AMTA, is the peak industry body representing Australia's mobile telecoms companies. Its mission, it says on the website... is to promote an environmentally, socially and economically responsible and successful mobile telecommunications industry in Australia. They have a mobile recycling program, which they call Mobile Muster. Now, the purpose behind this program is to take everybody's unused mobile phones, electronic equipment,
yes.
And recycle it, because it's going to be such a large problem in terms of all this rubbish, people are no longer using it.
Yep.
And there are dangerous chemicals in batteries.
Yep.
And in
heavy metals and cadmium and stuff in batteries. And there's also valuable elements in, there's gold in contacts and things that...
That's exactly right.
You can extract from this technology.
And it's all going into the rubbish. The program is designed to tackle the estimated stockpile of, wait for it, you're sitting down, 15.5 million old unused mobile phones, which are currently lying around at home in cupboards and drawers. So Mobile Muster, something that the AMTA are doing in an effort to deal with all of this problem. Coming up, do mature markets modularise? We'll be continuing our conversation about the commoditisation of technology. Have computers become completely modular? Do we still need people like Graham, trained service technicians, to diagnose faults and provide routine maintenance?
listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Listen up, it's Lydia here in Silicon Valley.
Tech Talk Radio's US correspondent, Lydia Davis, is offering listeners a chance to ask questions about blogging.
If you don't know the answer, I'll find out for you.
This is a great opportunity for people who are starting out in the world of blogging and why small businesses in particular would benefit from the Web 2.0 world. Visit Lydia's blog at blogwell.wordpress.com, or you can find the link on the Tech Talk Radio site. Go to the Tech Talk Radio tab on Blogwell and ask away. Fellow Aussies get preferential treatment. Take advantage of the fact that Lydia's also the marketing strategist for WebMama, one of Silicon Valley's biggest search engine optimization and search engine marketing firms. So why not hit her for some SEO help as well?
Come on, guys, let me have them.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. On, your host for this episode. Andrew is in absentia, sends his apologies and sends his regards, and Graham Callaghan is helping me out. We're talking about the commoditization of technology in the 21st century. I've got a pet hate, Graham. Want to get off my chest?
Oh, I like pet hates. Come
pet
on.
Hate. Printers.
Yes.
You can now buy inkjet printers for $50 to $60 from consumer electronics stores like Dick Smith, Tandy, or Radio Shack, they call it in the US, Officeworks. I'm going to pick on Canon Pixmar IP 1700 printers, $54.
Yep.
And let's pick on HP as well, their DeskJet printers, $60.
Yep. How much does it cost?
Thank you. You know exactly where I'm going with this, don't you?
I do. Now, how much does it cost for a set of ink cartridges for these printers?
For a fine colour cartridge, I checked my Dick Smith Electronics catalogue before coming in tonight, $39. And for a fine black cartridge, $37.49. So these two cartridges, by the way, are shipped with the new printer. So if I ran out of ink, should I go to the store and buy $80 worth of ink cartridges, or should I just throw the printer in the bin and buy a $54 printer which comes with the ink cartridges? I'm angry.
I can tell you're angry.
This is why.
You wonder what the manufacturers want you to do in this situation.
Well, I sell these printers. I sold a Canon Pixmar during the week, and I sold an HP DeskJet during the week to customers. And I said to them, if this printer breaks down or if you run out of ink, throw it away and buy a new one. And they said, well, hang on a minute, you run out of ink and throw it away. I said, yeah, don't go and buy ink. Throw it away. Buy a new one. You'll get the ink with it. You'll save $20 or $30.
Now, there's one thing to balance that out.
Yes.
And that's often with these printers, that the new ink cartridges that come with the printers are smaller than the ones you buy from the stationery suppliers.
Oh, okay.
So they do less pages. So that price break point might not quite be there.
So have a look. Do some homework.
But there still might be a case for throwing out your printer and just buying a new one when it runs out of ink.
It's almost like to the point whereby, oh, your mobile phone battery's gone flat. Oh, I'll just throw it away, buy a new one. It's crazy stuff. Do mature markets modularise, Graham? Just a yes or no? Would you like me to explain the question?
You might need to explain that a bit further, yeah?
Let me give you an example. The Ford Motor Company, back in the 1920s.
Yes?
Ford was operating factories on every continent. In over 20 countries, they were selling more cars and trucks and tractors than any other manufacturer 100 years ago. They used to build or manufacture or create every component that went in to the Ford. So, for example, the tyres on the Fords. Ford actually had rubber plantations in Brazilian jungles. They used to grow their own rubber and make their own tyres. They used to employ their own glass blowers to make their own windscreens. So everything was Ford, 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 Ford. Every single piece of everything in a car. Now, this was expensive. And someone said at one point in time to Mr. Ford, what about these upstart companies like Firestone and Goodyear? Why don't we buy tyres from them and we can close all these rubber plantations? We can save a lot of money. The industry was not mature 100 years ago, but slowly it began to modularise. They used to buy tyres. They used to get windscreens in. They'd get people to make seatbelts, people to make seats. They put it all together, put a Ford badge on it, and the market is now mature. 20 years ago, look at computers. Same thing. You used to buy self-contained, like I said, a TRS-80 at the start of the show, and you'd have the keyboard, the hard disk drives all integrated. Sorry, the floppy disk drives integrated, the CPU integrated, the screen.
Yep.
Was one unit. You had to take it to Tandy to get repaired if the keyboard broke down. If your keyboard breaks down now, what do?
You unplug it, throw it out, and buy a new one.
Exactly right. So is the computer industry, is the technology industry now at such a point that it is mature enough to support just component level replacement like this for every Tom, Dick and Harry?
Well, that's a valid point. I think that perhaps it's more of a continuum than a single break point.
Yeah.
In that the more mature the market is, the more it modularizes. There might be a case to make for that.
Yeah, yeah. Do we still need service technicians to actually fix things, or can we just chuck stuff away and replace it easily?
Well, you need a different type of service technician because you might need a service technician that can tell the difference between a faulty mouse and a faulty mouse driver on the computer.
Yeah.
Or you might need a service technician who can fix the faulty mouse driver on the computer rather than, when replacing the mouse doesn't actually do the job. If the fault's not in the obvious place, if it's not a simple hardware fault.
So I guess where do you think...
So I think you need... Sorry.
No, go on.
I think you need a different type of service technician, but you still need a service technician.
Yeah.
This is me talking out of self-interest. As a service technician.
Absolutely. No, absolutely it is. But a lot of people out there, like the customer that I quoted during the week, they wouldn't know how to move their personal data from one computer to another and things like that. So you still need people who have a level of knowledge.
And that's right.
You?
And in situations like that, the data that you're moving is usually worth many, many, many times more than the hardware that you're moving it from and to. So if you've got a faulty computer, the focus of the computer technician's job might be to save the data rather than saving the computer.
Graham, I think we've raised some very valid points in this episode, and certainly food for thought. It's something which I think about and which occupies my thoughts quite considerably. And I say that in a serious way, because you can see very much in our lifetimes how this is emerging, this trend is developing, and it's something...
You can, very much.
Yeah. Now, moving on, onwards and upwards, coming up after the break, the price of convenience. Graham, forget about going to the video store for your movies and forget about downloading on Fraudband. Paul Clitheroe in the latest edition of Money magazine has got another idea altogether. We're going to be back after this short break.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link. The Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
It is The Panel. This is Dr. Ron. And we've got Graham Callaghan with us as well for this week's edition of the program. Andrew will be coming back next week, hopefully, with Mark. Now, Graham.
Yes.
In the past, we've spoken about the future prospects of video libraries. And we've said, what should we be doing? Should we be going down to the video store to get videos, or should we be downloading them? There is another option which we didn't explore when
What's
we were talking
that?
About that a couple of weeks ago. Now, Paul Clitheroe, who is a very respected financial advisor in Australia, he's got another idea. Online hiring of movies. This is quite clever. In the latest edition of Money magazine, he's talking about online stores that will ship you the latest releases. So you can actually click on what you want to watch. They will mail you via normal post the DVD, for example. And then, once you've finished watching it, he'll have a self-enclosed return envelope, which gets sent with the DVD. You just pop it back in the parcel.
And mails the DVD back.
Seal it up, drop it back in the letterbox.
Yeah. There's been services around like that for a little while. You can occasionally get free trials on them or low-cost trials for...
You can.
The first three discs or something like that, yep.
Exactly. So that's another option, which we didn't talk about a couple of weeks ago when we were saying, oh, do you go to the video store, no, I download movies. There is a
It's still
a third
kind
option.
Of the low-tech snail mail approach, though, isn't it?
It is.
I'm not sure...
It's not a technological approach, no, but it's look, it might be an option for some.
Hmm.
Not something that I use personally, but look, Paul actually in his article compared three retail providers, Blockbuster, Civic and Video Easy, with three online providers, Big Pond, Quick Flicks and Webflix.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, and he decided that, look, whether it's for you, whether it's cost effective or not, depends on how many movies you watch, what sort of movies you watch. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's something to keep in mind. I thought that was interesting. Patch Tuesday, tomorrow.
Yes.
What's going on there? Hello,
okay.
Microsoft.
Now, Microsoft have got yet another six updates here or there.
Oh, good.
There's a couple for, there's about three for Windows XP, Windows 2000, Windows Vista, Windows Server 2003.
That far out, Brussels sprout. yeah.
With, that are rated as at least two of those, I think, are rated as critical.
Right.
And there's also patches for Outlook Express and Windows Mail. And there's also patches, there's a patch for Internet Explorer.
Yep.
And there's a patch for Visio 2002-2003, which is their drawing sort of package that you might use for draw flowcharts or diagrams and stuff like that. Now, they're all likely to appear in your Windows, in your automatic updates if you've got them switched on.
Hope they've got them turned on in the space shuttle.
I don't think they're running the right version of Windows in the space shuttle to need the... I think it's kind of a closed system. I don't think you can connect directly to the internet from the space shuttle.
Can't
either.
You? Oh, you
so they might not be quite as vulnerable to these sorts of problems as you or I. But if you've got a computer connected to the internet, even though Microsoft occasionally have trouble with their patches that come down automatically, it's far safer to have the automatic updates turned on than to leave them off and to miss out on these, because for some of these there are already well-known exploits. And just on that same topic before we move on, there's a Yahoo Messenger update that fixes the well-known bug in their webcam feature.
Have they got which a well-known bug, have they?
They have, unfortunately, and there's now been an exploit actually published that allows people to take advantage of this fault. So if you're a user of Yahoo Messenger,
yeah, which I
in
am.
Particular, if you use the webcam feature,
yep.
You need to go and get the new version of that as well.
All right, let us know if everything goes smoothly or if you have any problems. Send us a post or an email, maybe go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Absolutely, let we can always know. Help you there.
Absolutely. Now, coming up, the last part of the show, the favourite bit of the week for everybody, Gadget, Website, Oddspot. We're nearly there. We'll be right back after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my
Have you ever had one of those days, Dr. Ron?
I've had a few in the last week, actually.
When your computer has said something like, fatal exception at location 0x08003FAB.
Yeah, throw out the monitor, buy a new one.
Yeah, and it's just made you want to attack your computer.
You want to smash it, you want to put your fist through it.
This is the device for you.
Oh, really?
It's called the Screen Smasher.
No.
And you can buy it off the web. It costs about $20 US, it looks like.
Right, yep.
Comes with some special software. It comes with a little sensor you clip onto your monitor that plugs into your USB port, and an 8-inch foam axe.
A foam axe. An axe as in what firemen carry to smash things.
Yep.
And it's a foam one, so you don't do any permanent damage.
You don't actually do any permanent damage to LCD screen, but you whack it with this foam axe, and the software simulates the glass cracking on the front of the screen in what looks like a frighteningly realistic way.
So how does it know you've actually made contact with the screen?
There's a little USB sensor that you clip onto your screen and plugs in your USB port.
What will I think of next? Oh, well, there you go. You've heard it here first.
www.screensmasher.com.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
The website this week is www.redkid.net/generator/star. Now, this is the Hollywood Walk of Fame star generator. So, thank you very much to... Now, who posted this on the forum? TARDIS3. Thanks, TARDIS3, for posting this one. It was a very good addition to the forum for us. Lots of fun. Great for generating clever little graphics for web pages and blogs. It's an image generator, Graham. So you can type in text, you can type in words. You might say, we love Tech Talk Radio, and click generate. And it will actually put the words that you type, it'll overlay it onto an image. So the website that I read out at the start is actually like a Hollywood Walk of Fame star. So you can get your text in the star. And there's lots of other image templates as well, like there's iPod playlist generators, and there's
Scooby-Doo says generators, and there's alphabet soup word generators. It's a lot of fun, and it's great for blogs and little websites. So we'll put the full address on the forum, but it's redkid.net/generator/star.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, it's that part of the episode again, isn't it, really? The Odd Spot. Graham Britton's accidentally flush 885,000 mobile phones down the toilet each year, according to new research. The phones fall out of pockets or into the toilet after being placed on the toilet roll holder. The research was carried out by SimplySwitch.com, and if the results are to be believed, 1.5% of Britons flush their phones by accident every year. Ever flushed your phone?
I haven't, but it's gone close a couple of times.
We used to, talking about repairing items, I used to repair little radio pages. People used to have pages that fall off their belt into the drink.
Yes,
yes, which is,
so to speak,
which is rather unfortunate. That's the Odd Spot for this week. And that draws to conclusion another Tech Talk Radio. So thank you for tuning in. Graham, thank you very much for all your help with the production work and your efforts tonight. It's been sensational.
Certainly been fun this week, hasn't it?
It has been very fun, very different. Thank you as well to Andrew for entrusting both of us with this week's production.
And Andrew will be back next week.
He will, thank goodness. Big sigh of relief. Breathe with me.
With another fun-filled, action-packed show.
It will be a fun-filled, action-packed adventure. Back again next week, same time, same place. I'm Dr. Ron. Thanks for tuning in. Bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.